Greetings, everyone. I'm Rafael Tamayo, manager of the Oak Cliff Cultural Center, and you are listening to OC3 Frequencies, a podcast by the Oak Cliff Cultural Center. We are a division of the City of Dallas Office of Arts and Culture, and let's get going. I'm going to let our staff introduce themselves so we can get started with this conversation.
Hey, I'm Andrea, Cultural Programs Coordinator here at OC3.
Hi, I'm Iris, Gallery Programs Coordinator at OC3.
Without further ado, I'll let our coordinator, Andrea, introduce our special guest.
Well, we are really excited to have with us here today, Tony Nguyen, Des Moines-born, Dallas-based cultural worker who recruits talent for movement organizations, distributes for Sentient Art Film, is the co-founder of Latin American Film Festival of Dallas, also programs for the Austin Asian American Film Festival, and I have this last one here. It's the, organizes the digital infrastructure for the Viet Film Festival and is the founder of Spacey, the first ever microcinema in Dallas, Texas. Let's welcome Tony Nguyen. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's honestly impressive that you could list out all my five fake jobs.
It's amazing. Thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me here.
Well, I first want to make sure that I give a shout out to William Saradet and Lindsay Nicht, both of which were instrumental in me finding out about Spacey through Glass Tire. And so I wanted to first off ask you to tell us a little bit about Spacey and then to tell us about what's happening this February, like what's screened already and what's going to screen.
Yeah, big shout out to the Glass Tire homies, if anything. But, Spacey, I will just say that, like, it's a microcinema, in which, it's a exposition space for the moving image. But at the same time, I can see the space to be fluid for anything, of course, beyond the moving image. But I think just on the regular that it's a place just for the emphasizing the moving image. But I think in general, I'm always trying to, the space will always generally play more works that need an extra spotlight that generally wouldn't have exposition in the Dallas Metroplex. And it's 35 seats, very scrappy, DIY. It's in a room within Tyler Station. The realtor who showed me the place literally called the hall that the room is in is like the dungeon of Tyler Station, which is, I thought, like really appealing. But it's like an ongoing project. And I say that instead of like business, because like, I think it's like a venture that I wanted to be like collaborative with, like not only like my friends, but like people, both in the Dallas Metroplex and then just like internationally, of just like if they have any proposals, pitches of any ideas that they want to program, that I'd be open to, of course, like hearing them out. Because again, I think that like fluidity is really important when it comes to showing films, because I think film is such a collaborative like method. And then, like, lastly, I think the space is also kind of showing, like, you know, you all you kind of really need is, like, a room You don't need like a standalone building. You just really kind of need like some chairs, a room, a screen, and you can call it a day. In terms of what's played so far in February, this month has been really emphasizing like really the nuances of like Black life. So we're playing the majority of Bill Gunn's movies, for example. We've played Personal Problems. Oh my God, Personal Problems, Ganja and Hess. Mm-hmm. And then, so those are two features that he directed. And then we're also showing Kathleen Collins' Losing Ground, which Bill Gunn was also a actor in and also a very great friend of Kathleen Collins. Mm-hmm. And we've also have done showings of Shakedown, which is this fabulous documentary that's in LA. I mean, that's featuring this like club in LA. And then what else? I'm thinking Cane River, which is like this sweet comedy, romantic comedy that's based in the South, about this like woman that meets a man, and then of course like they kind of get into like, you know, what makes them kind of like really interesting, etc. What else has played? I'm like forgetting because I'm like already trying to figure out like next month's stuff.
Yeah, I was looking at your calendar and yeah, I don't know how you keep up with everything. There's a lot.
I don't. Because I have so many other calendars. And then we're doing a double feature on Les Blank. We're doing two Texas musicians, like a focus on two Texas musicians from his work. And then also doing a double feature of John Akamfra's works. And yeah, I mean, all these movies are just playing in February. What else do we have upcoming? And then we're doing also a free screening in collaboration with Cinemoval. Inspired by the work that Cinemoval has done. It's called Exploring Modes of Resistance. I will have a peer of mine doing a discussion after the film, but it's really just like the critical modes of how we can kind of resist, especially in the times of what's going on in Palestine. So we have that. And then the last day of the month will kick off the Latin American Film Festival of Dallas, which is a new venture for me because it's the first edition of that festival.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the films look really great. You mentioned providing a space where some of these films could have like an extra spotlight. So do you, when you're curating the films, do you have a set of criteria for the films that you're choosing? What are you looking for in the films that you want to spotlight?
Yeah, I mean, I think at one angle, like, I think when you're curating for like a more populous audience, like, I think you're always trying to curate for like the people at hand versus curating for yourself. Especially with film, it's different from like, let's say, like art galleries, because you know you're trying to really kind of like get the attention of more like people who have like bags of money. but with like film, it's like you just only have to pay like a $10 admission, and you know, and then you get the experience of the lifetime. So I think it's like a matter of, I always want people to kind of be unsure of like what's kind of next for me, like kind of keep them on their toes of like what's kind of next, and understand maybe there's like key values or like maybe core core themes that I'm always kind of running into. But outside of that, it really could be just like anything and everything. Mm-hmm. In terms of those core values that maybe I generally go after, I do like to kind of, I do definitely gravitate towards like people on the fringes of society. And I'll keep that broad, just because that could really mean so many things. I'll look into stuff that I think, you know, definitely has maybe a lot of work that generally has never been played in just the United States in general. So I think, you know, that getting just a spotlight in itself is of course like pretty miraculous. And then I think stuff that's really heavy and nuanced, like themes that really go about like maybe themes that generally we don't kind of just in general kind of go through on the everyday. So maybe stuff like eco-terrorism, for example. Mm-hmm. I think that's actually like a series that I'm trying to like workshop in the future. But yeah, I think the most important thing though is like just kind of like figuring out, especially in like the larger city, is like what is like the alternative that they're kind of looking for. And I think that's really just like people that of course like that might relate to them. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm also kind of pushing that idea of like, well, you don't have to relate to these people to kind of still have like these like granular experiences with the film. Mm-hmm. And I think the most important thing is like, for me, I could play a more like more quote unquote popular work, but mm-hmm. I think it's also like what the angle or framing is. So if I'm like putting it in the series, like what's the framing within the series? Like if we have like, I don't know, like a film that's like you would think it's really funny because like it's like a kid's movie, it's not like a kid's movie, I'll take like Cars 2 for example. like, but like maybe it's like actually like a deeper movie that's actually about like eco-terrorism or whatever, you can probably mm-hmm. think of something crazy behind that. But like but like depending on like what the framing or angle is, I think that's actually also more valuable, if not more if that's as valuable, if not more valuable. And then I'm always also trying to have other people put in their input as well. Mainly it's been friends, but I've been also getting a lot more interest of people that I don't know kind of mm-hmm. doing programming as well, which has been probably the most exciting thing because yeah. I think with them, it's like, you know, I always wanted to be like a collaborative process because I think film in general could be such a like monolith, mm-hmm. especially with the institutions, it can be extremely monolith.
Yes. Yeah. And you're getting a whole lot of different perspectives whenever you're bringing in those collaborators.
Yeah. I mean, I will say like, I'm not the expert on anything. Like, honestly, like I know like some films here and there, but like, I mean, people, like, some people, like, know different languages. Some people just grew up with lived experiences that, of course, I will never know.
Yeah.
Some people will have interests that they're so deeply passionate about that I just kind of don't know. You know, I think it's always better to kind of hear from them. I know just for me, though, just because, as you heard, I have so many of these jobs that like I kind of scramble and I don't have as much time to kind of coordinate working with other people because it does take a long time, of course, crafting and collaborating with people. Mm-hmm. But it is, of course, like extremely rewarding doing so.
Yeah.
Well, that leads me to think about film in terms of pedagogy and where you stand on film in terms of pedagogy. And it also makes me think about the connection between criticism, film criticism, and curation.
I think the big thing right now is that, especially in a world to where more and more of youth are interested or it's part of their stasis of like the moving image, that I think we just have to really emphasize like what these images are kind of like, you know, spelling out to these people, or at least they want to leave for the imagination. And so I think with a lot of film is that I think that has to be less about like a show and tell, and more of like, you know, what you can kind of like actually leave up to your own imagination. And if there is like a lot to kind of debunk or like process, that you can kind of do in your own accord or do with people afterwards. I think that's like the most important thing, is just like the I'm more interested in people having the conversations after or before, or taking it somewhere else, than sometimes the film itself. And then I always encouraging people when it comes to the lens of criticism is that, like, since film is such a multifaceted process, that like then people have to understand that film is not in a vacuum, and then they have to kind of explore other not only art forms, but other like cultures, people's experiences, ideas, in order to fully grasp, or at least as the best as they can grasp something. Because if you're only like understanding film through film theory, then that's honestly kind of just like a really scary thing.
Well, even that is from someone's individual perspective. A critic is speaking from their own voice and their own experience.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think with really criticism, it's like I think there has to definitely, of course, be like context of like the person, the work at hand, but then like, you know, when did that work fall into like the general context within it? Like, did it fall into like a context that was just extremely historical and political? And then like, what did that kind of also like do afterwards? Like, what was the like long lasting impact? Well, like, what's the long lasting impact like today? So I think it's just really like what the framing is in terms of criticism. But I think, you know, anyone can be a critic, but like in terms of, I guess, like how they digest work though, I think there's more nuances and questions of like how you should approach something, because I think everyone can have an opinion, but in terms of like what kind of questions that need to be asked, I think that's the more larger part, which is like, you know, what does this kind of say in terms of, I guess, like the larger body of work, or, you know, what does it kind of say in terms of, I guess, like the connection with like the artists who made it, and then with the work itself? Is there a connection, or is it kind of like, does it bleed? I'll take the example of like, I don't know, like Woody Allen, to where like he's obviously done like detrimental damage to like no other, and of course he's still playing work in theaters and VOD platforms, but does his work, in terms, I guess, like what actions that he's done, does actually coincide with his work? It does, because I think his work is so much about like relationships and people, of course, like navigating quote unquote like nuances of like relationships, that it does kind of tap into like, you know, the atrocities he's done, or like Alina Dunham, for example, to where she's also said a lot of crazy stuff, but it also makes sense in like context of like the work that she's done, to where like that's the only voice that she has, and then that the work she's had is like very nuanced work, because that's it does show like a certain segment of people, and what that really insular like society kind of says.
Yeah, well, Iris and I went to Spacey last fall and saw Sunny Martinez and Sofia Marina's film series at Spacey, and have seen other films there, and of course
judging from our conversation thus far already and our experiences at Spacey, we know that you show a variety of films coming from a variety of perspectives aimed at different audiences. So I think this is a great time to segue into talking about what we talked about a little bit before, the film Lo Que Queda en el Camino, and also the film Nothing But a Man, in terms of approaching subject matter that has to deal with community outside of your own.
Yeah, I know this is like a really hot topic in like the film industry in general, just because in the world of like film festivals in the United States, I think there is like there is like an emphasis and a larger push that if the subjects of the work don't connect with the actual person's identity in some way. So let's say, for example, like if a movie that's dealing about like Brazil doesn't, and the director is not Brazilian, then that's almost like a no-no in that world, in the world, in the United States at least, versus like in the European markets. They're like, they don't care as much. I think they're more like willing to look if the actual like subject matter of the film and how it's executed is like good, which are cool. You know, there's both sides of the coin, so it has its pros and cons of, but when it comes to like dealing with, of course, like these like films, and I'll give context to like Lo Que Queda en el Camino specifically, which is about a woman from Central America who is fleeing from her abusive husband. She takes her kids and migrates to the United States Mexico border. And a lot of the movie is just walking. A lot of the movie is just her kids showing love to her, her love for the kids, which is a lot, which is, you know, is something you generally don't see in migrant documentaries because so much of it is such torture porn. But it was told by the perspective of a German man, and then it was a Brazilian man. I don't know the names on top of my head, but it was by those, it was a collection of two directors, and it played well in European festivals, but the movie, I think it only played in one US festival. So I think it kind of does show that there is like this larger emphasis on that. But I think when we were distributing this film for Sentient Art Film was that we were, of course, interested in the subject matter because we were seeing that the directors really were getting a lot of input from the mom. Like the mom had as much impact in the script as the director's visions and whatnot. And of course, creating the vision, they were always around her. They were like sleeping in the caravans with them. They weren't going back to like their 5-star hotels after shooting 8 hours a day. Like they were with them like 24/7. And the camera was always such like a tool to kind of also like reinforce safety around the other migrants around them. So I think it's also these like larger questions that people aren't wrestling when they're like, of course, like seeing a film. Like they'll just see, this is what the movie is from the synopsis, this is what, who the directors are, and maybe they'll read like a review or two. But I think most of the reviews will generally, of course, get into like just the subject matter of the documentary itself, and won't really get into like the nitty gritty of like what was really the behind the scenes. And do you actually feel that there is like larger collaboration, a lot of like care and community ethics around like it? And I think these questions aren't really proposed as much. And so what we did with that film was we played it in unconventional venues. So we worked with like grassroots organizations who are already doing community work to play for migrant audiences. So I think there's, of course, like alternative questions, alternate ways that you can play these movies. And then I guess like going back to like Nothing But a Man, especially this is a movie about Black life in the South, but it was made by a white German man. One of his writers was Black, but it kind of does show like there is more behind to the scenes. Like he had a collaborator, but I think at the end of the day, he was doing an immense amount of research of just like, you know, what the kind of gardener in like what it was like for a Black man in the South to kind of be during this time. I think the movie captures nuances extremely well. And I think people will kind of dismiss that just because there's not an alignment of that. It's just like, oh, why is this like white man approaching the subject matter? That's not his lane to do so, which I think, you know, there is fair criticism within that. I'm not dismissing that, you know, there are like ways in which, you know, there's always other people who can, you know, actually like identify with those type of things. And then of course, giving those people a platform. But I think at the end of the day, like if the everyday person can't somehow like wrestle with their own experiences and then like outside experiences, then I don't know how people will ever kind of like learn. Like people have to kind of learn how to wrestle with outside of experiences. And then of course, when you have like a set, there is going to be collaboration and there will be people to say like, no, this isn't something that can be put in the script or this can't be set in motion, et cetera.
Yeah. In order to prepare for our talk today, I read Bell Hooks, well, not all of it, but I read select essays from Bell Hooks, Race, Sex, Class at the Movies, and Reel to Reel is the main title. And in it, she actually brought up the work of Jim Jarmusch and John Salis, I think I'm saying his name correctly, as an example of two white directors that were doing progressive representations of Black characters that she found acceptable, and gave instances where just having it be essential that the person dealing with the subject matter of Black life be Black themselves wasn't always a criteria that met the muster of having Black representation be progressive. A lot of times there were Black filmmakers that were very conservative that failed to present Black life out of a stereotypical situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, it's kind of like, I know there was like this like larger phrase to where I think, I forgot what was the context exactly, but I know it was like during like a red carpet interview where I think it was said that it was just like, oh, I'm just gonna support everyone Black. And I'll kind of like tie that to my experience with being like an Asian man. I'm not going to support every Asian person in this world. Like there are Asian people who would denounce who I am, denounce other communities that they're at because they could just be like absolutely terrible people with awful politics. There are definitely like people that would not align in the everyday. And that I refuse to actually like have like a middle ground with. So in terms of, I guess like these questions of like representation, then it's like how far can you kind of go in terms, I guess, like capturing nuances, because yes, like there are like stories to where like you can capture like a certain angle, but I feel like at that point, like that quote unquote angle is only just going to be like the only focus that's going to be like cared upon and whatnot. And I've actually had these like larger talks with some of my friends too, to where like I'm kind of seeing like, why is it that like all these Asian shows, TV shows, for example, are only about like family? Why are the only shows that are in the larger, that's like talked about in the larger mainstream when it comes to Black TV, that keeps being renewed, greenlit, are just all about drugs and drug empires? Like why is there not more multiplicity in terms of like how these people are kind of approaching like everyday life? Because like there is so much more beyond that. Like, why can't I have like an actual like evil Asian person or whatever? Or actually have like more like you know, rom-com stuff, and etc. So I think there's just like more to it that wants to be like, I think there just has to be more that kind of needs to be focused on. But at the end of the day, I think like it's both like macro in terms, I guess, like consumer interests, but then it's also like, I think there's also like a larger disconnect with like executives, like head honchos making like larger decisions, and then having them having like battles with like the people who are actually doing the work, aka like writers and actors, etc. And then of course them just being only interested in like what's making money.
Exactly. Yes, so capitalism rears its ugly head again.
In admiring all the work that you and Spacey has already done, I mean, it's from the distance, like it's really cool to see this keen sense of the impact of film and its significance culturally. And I think you've already in such a short period of time provided such a robust stream of programming. It was interesting at the beginning of the podcast. It was almost like, you know, you had this, oh, I have calendars everywhere and I don't know what I'm doing next month. But it's like very deliberate and intentional with the work you're doing because of these kinds of understandings within the industry, the impact at large, and then the different kinds of perspective globally that film is digested with. And I think that's like, I can't express the magnitude of significance of that for the culture, specifically in Dallas. And so I feel like one of my main questions is, like, are you documenting you and the work that Spacey is doing? Because I feel like that in itself is telling a story that a lot of people could learn from about the importance of dialogue and, you know, viewing through specific lenses and understanding cultural context of art.
We have to call it the dungeon documentary.
I mean, it is like a living, I mean, that's the thing. It's just like, and that's why I always like refrain to call it like a business. It's just like, it does feel like just an ongoing project. Because in some ways I think it's like sometimes fake, but sometimes like it's also like, it is just like a living archive. I'm really bad at documenting, which is just really funny because I'm a history major and I actually love going through archives. But I think the big thing is like, I'm always inspired by what's going on in Dallas. I love the city. But at the same time, I think it was also important for me to consider what else was through an international lens, like what is going on internationally. And then of course, bring in those like perspectives here, because as much as I love, you know, this, like what's going on here, I think sometimes there is so much emphasis on hyperlocal, which is important, but like hyperlocal also needs to capture like international, because like, I feel like if there's, again, it's like that talk of like insular, it's like, you can't like live in a bubble. You know, people have like there's so much out there that I even haven't uncovered yet. That it's really exciting that every month is always something else. And that like every month is also like potential for like people to kind of like put themselves out there. Mm-hmm. And just in general, like I just want the place to be like a place of intimacy and for people to kind of meet each other and know that there's other like-minded people. And that like the moving image can be like placed in importance again, because I do love Dallas, but I think like it's definitely more of a visual arts city. I mean the biggest like arts museum here doesn't even have like a dedicated film programmer. It doesn't have like a film program. True. Like Fort Worth does, but not here. So that, I mean, that's kind of telling. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of like that, to where like, you know, I think there is like a lot of communities that I do want to tap into, because I'm always interested in getting all those people together, mm-hmm. like the skaters or like the video artists or like the chefs, etc. I do mm-hmm. want to like have mm-hmm. them all mingle in like the same room.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Spacey has really filled a gap mm-hmm. that's been missing in the city for a long time. And I don't know if you were here whenever Premiere Video was still open, but it was this amazing video store where you could rent, you could still rent. I think they even had some VHS, but it was mostly DVDs. But it was this huge video store on Mockingbird Lane and off of Central Expressway. And it was the most awesome place. And you could go in and find like really interesting films. You know, you would find just the popular things too as well. But they had just a lot of really interesting films that were, you know, you'd never heard of. They were kind of obscure to you. Mm-hmm. But they closed. Gosh, I don't know when it was. Maybe it was like 2015. Yeah, the before times.
You could even check out DVD players that were outside your region. And
yeah, it was really amazing. It was a huge treasure trove of films. And you just can't find, I mean, you have to really hunt, I think, you know, online streaming wherever you are. So I hope that if y'all are listening, y'all need to check out Spacey if you're really interested in films or just really interested in seeing something that you would not see anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you can't make it to Spacey, I can also like point to you if the movie is online, know how you can watch it. I think for me, it's just more important that people kind of see the stuff.
Yeah.
But it's always nice to experience it in a room with other people, or at least get out of your house to kind of like see it.
Yeah.
Just because I think that is like the thing. It's like, I think things can be so isolating. And it's just always nice to kind of like get out the house and kind of see if there's other people to like experience it with.
And you opened Spacey in 2020, correct?
No.
2021.
Well, I'm trying to remember. I opened it in last August.
Oh, last August. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. And in terms of like tinkering on the idea, honestly, like it's like, I've never like, it wasn't like one of those things where like, I like always dreamed of opening up a theater, et cetera. I actually found out about Premiere Video through like their closing sale. So I didn't hear about them before. I think it's also because like, I grew up not actually watching movies as a kid. Because my parents couldn't afford going to the movies, one, but also like there was like a language barrier. So I really actually got into movies through the public library when I was like volunteering there. Shout out to North Garland Public Library. but with opening one, you know, I think it was more about like, when I was kind of like thinking about my experiences, like, you know, going to the movies, getting movies, et cetera, or like buying movies. I think it was more about like a expedition space mm-hmm. and less so like a microcinema. I think microcinema was just more like a cute tagline sometimes, mm-hmm. but I mean, the lane that I generally know more is like film. Although I could do music, it's just like the overhead is like way too high. So I think film is just like a little easier to kind of for an entry point. Mm-hmm. But it was an exhibition space, and I kind of like did it maybe like, I had like 3 months to kind of get my stuff together basically, because it was more about if I could find a place that I could afford. Mm-hmm. And then from there I was able to like somehow get my stuff together.
Yeah. Well, we talked a little bit. This was at Sara Cardona's film series that she did over in just outside of the Design District, and you were the moderator. Uh-huh. And we talked a little bit about interest that you had outside of film, and you were mentioning to me fragrances, perfumes. Could you talk a little bit about that? And then...
Yeah, I mean, that's actually something I do want to explore in the future. Like, I would love to do like scented programs, scented screenings, but I'm like trying to figure out what that looks like. I might have to like get a spray or whatever. But I think it's like, and this actually ties to like criticism, is that like I got into fragrance despite having like the worst sense of smell. It's like really bad. Like I've been trying to go to a doctor to kind of figure out like, it's just like constant congestion. I don't know what it is, but like,
it's Dallas.
It may be, pollution. I don't know where it came from because it wasn't always like this, but I think with fragrances, it's like one, you understand stuff through like primary, secondary, and tertiary layers. But then like you understand then like how stuff can complement like those type of layers. So I'll like sometimes pair a fragrance with like an activity that I'm doing. And, you know, then I kind of see like how those two talk to each other, or contrast from each other. And then you're learning the language of a perfume. And when you're describing it, it's less like, I would say it's like less like adjectives. It's more like nouns and verbs. You're trying to like make out a picture. And you're trying to make out like environments or ideas that you've never wrestled with before, or you've never been like approached to. And it's a really like fascinating like medium. And you just also smell good. Like, what more can you want? But I mean, in terms of criticism, I forgot my original point of criticism is that I think with fragrance, it helps you really understand, like the general, idea that you can kind of see stuff in a completely different angle of how like, what do these kind of like characters and environments actually like feel, like smell, or like et cetera, et cetera? Or how does it kind of parallel to like the larger stuff kind of going on and like a lived experiences? Because there is so much like dimension to like a scene, for example. And I think with like perfumes especially, like again, it does like tap into like stuff that you would never ever ever imagine that you would kind of like tinker with. And then like I think it's also just like a very immediately like challenging medium that I think anyone could pick up on. Now it's like an expensive hobby, but like, you know, sometimes you'll smell like pee, sometimes you'll smell like flowers, and then you kind of like figure out like what you like and what you don't like. And then it's just kind of fun, like kind of like figuring that out.
Have you considered, like, I'm just, when you were talking, I was thinking about like what you had mentioned about, you know, ecotourism films and like thinking about like curating a series on that, but thinking about like really, really natural smells, like the smell of like, you know, compost or fresh dirt or something is like very different than a perfume.
Right.
Per se.
Yeah. I mean, I actually like sometimes like I'll take like the series that I'm doing, Sonic the Sonic Resonance series I'm doing for this month with y'all. And I'm thinking more of like the textures of Black music, for example, like the remixing, the rethreading, like, you know, I'm always trying to sometimes like, even when I'm approaching like movies, for example, like I'm always kind of thinking about like those textures or like, how does it kind of remind me of this? Because like, again, like when it comes to like the references that I'm trying to approach, it's less movies, but more like, oh, maybe I'll think about like the remixing of like a DJ Screw like song or something. Or I'll think about like, yeah, as you're saying, like maybe like some lemongrass and like what that kind of like captures. And then of course it just gets more fun that way too. You can just always tie things back to something and then like make something larger than what you kind of already like anticipate. I mean, than what you originally like thought about. So I think with curating, yeah, I'm always trying to like think about other stuff that's just not films and then kind of bring that in.
Wow. I'm just, I'm overjoyed that we've had this opportunity to learn more about Spacey, learn more about you and what direction or what surprises actually, because you were talking about going in unpredictable directions. Is there anything that you want to cover that we haven't talked about yet?
Oh my God, this is a good question. I will actually say, this is just a really funny thing, but I think it goes back to like interests beyond film. I'll say like film for me isn't the end all be all. It's actually like not my favorite frequency. It's not my favorite medium. I think even music is above it. But like I think my favorite thing in the world is always just like, you know, getting dinner with friends or eating a good meal with people. I think there's a lot to learn with just kind of getting in person about these type of activities. So I think it's just kind of really encouraging more and more people to like get outside of their comfort zone and like really get back into like engaging in activities in person, but at least like bare minimum, at least find the people online that if you can't do it in person, that find those people online that you just want to have those like larger discussions with, because like again, the world is just becoming more and more isolating, and I think it's really more important than ever to try to find those like niches. And it doesn't have to be a physical space. Sometimes it's even more fun that it's an abstract. But like, as long as you find like the niche, I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Well, how can people find you and, find Spacey?
You can go to Spacey. It's SPACYDTX.com. There's information there and just the full calendar. If you're one of those people who doesn't believe in websites anymore,
lots of people out there.
Lots of people, unfortunately. I love a website. Like, I love the interactivity of a website. But if you're one of those people, there's also Instagram. It's SpaceyDTX as well. And if you don't want to see what's playing for the week, you can go through the highlights and see what's playing for that week. And then you can also sign up for the newsletter on the website as well. But yeah, I think that's it otherwise.
All right. Well, everything's been answered for me. It's a wonderful conversation.
Yeah. I mean, y'all are listening. Y'all need to check out Spacey DTX.
Yeah.
Go see a couple of films, do dinner beforehand or afterwards, go out.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot.
Be with the people.
Yeah. I forgot to say it's in Tyler Station and it's convoluted to find.
Oh, yes. It's fun though. It's an adventure.
People say that. I think they just say it to be nice to me.
No. I thought it was really wonderful walking kind of like the weird going down the elevator and going the back way. And,
oh my God.
And I think because that building is kind of a historic building, it's not historically designated, but it is an old, it was an old paper mill. But what's interesting is that you get to see like the kind of innards of the building that you wouldn't normally see if you were just going to one of the other retail spaces.
Past the woodworking shop.
Eric
and I.
No, I think, I mean, I appreciate that people say that because I think I see the same things. It's always good to see like, you know, every new day, like what's, you know, what has changed about it? Like, do they move like a different block or whatever? but at the same time, I'm like, oh, like the people are always showing up like 15, 20 minutes late. Like, I need to figure it out. But yeah, it's inside Tyler Station. But if you can't find it, there is information on the website to help you find a space. If you go through, if you buy a ticket, also there's also a video link that shows you also how to do it, and then Instagram also tells you. I say all this because I'm the type of person where I would ignore all of this and I would try to figure it out on my own, but it's all there if you're trying to find the spot.
I think that's probably more than some other places give you in terms of direction.
So adventurous. If you're feeling adventurous, make it to Spacey. I think it's also indicative of the work that you're doing, Tony. So thank you. Thank you for, you know, joining us here at the Oak Cliff Cultural Center. I think we don't have any other questions, right?
No.
Yeah. I mean, we will, but...
No, we will. Once we stop recording, that's when the real question... Yeah. One day, I'm going to just keep recording so that people can listen to our questions.
I mean, I've learned to like my voice because I used to do college radio, so I could go all day.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, but... I mean, I don't know what else to say other than check out Spacey. I think it's really important, one, to see you doing the kind of work that you're doing with Spacey. And you're setting an example that is really powerful. And a lot of us, you know, are taking notes. And a lot of us are really excited about what you've done and what you're looking to do in the future. And I'm not saying that to plug the February film series that Oak Cliff Cultural Center is doing with Spacey, but I'm also saying that to plug that series. I think, you know, with Andrea and some of the conversations she's had with you and looping us in, it's really exciting to find a way to be supportive of that, because I think that as a collective unit here at OC3, we see the significance of what you're doing. And It does need to be supported, and I think it's really cool. Dallas doesn't really know what they have right now, but I feel like with Spacey, our city will get to a point where it's like, look at what we have.
Yeah, I hope this. I hope the big thing is like it goes back to like this idea of like all you need is really a room. Like I just encourage people that sometimes you don't even need a room. Like just get some chairs, get a projector, do it outside if you have to. I think I say that just because like I've been thinking a lot about this, is that a lot of the people who do actually come are actually from the burbs. And it's just been like, it's one flattering, of course, because it's just like, it's really like amazing that people are willing to like drive so far to kind of like experience alternative culture. But then it made me like think, it was just like, well, people shouldn't also have to like drive so far to like experience this type of stuff. So I hope this means that like more people can kind of see this is like actually feasible and start their own things in their, in their neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. When I think that's what I feel like you're sort of clarifying things for a lot of us that we didn't really even think about or consider previously. But, you know, even in talking with you, you're bringing those questions up within an individual. Like I'm thinking about those things, right? And I'm thinking, wow, Tony, Spacey, they're doing this. And it kind of puts my mind in an idea of, well, this is something that I couldn't see or that I wanted to. What is it? What do I need to do to make that happen? Because one, it broadens perspective, obviously, but it contributes to the fabric of what's going on in this city, which is a lot, but also is missing just as much. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, again, thank you to Tony. To all our listeners, make sure you check out at SpaceyDTX or SpaceyDTX.com, located at Tyler Station. Again, we have an a February film series that Oak Cliff Cultural Center is doing in collaboration with Spacey. And we're looking forward to all the exciting programming that's coming up. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, make sure you send us a DM, send us an email, reach out to Spacey DTX, holler at Tony and say, hey, I heard the podcast. Got a quick question for you. So thank you again, our special guest. You have been listening to OC3 Frequencies, a podcast presented by the Oak Cliff Cultural Center. We are a division of the City of Dallas Office of Arts and Culture. If you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, I will never stop saying, please rate us, give us a 5-star rating and review. We love to see that. And if not 5-star, let us know how we can improve. We love feedback. So you can also listen to this on SoundCloud and Spotify. And if you have any ideas for future shows, make sure you send us an email or a DM. And on that note, thank you again to our special guest. We'll catch y'all on the next time. Bye, y'all.
Bye. Bye-bye.